You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. Come get some. Beware,
IGN GameScoop. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Greg Miller.
Hi.
Dan Stapleton.
Yes, sir.
Justin Davis.
Scoop.
We have a fantastic show for you this week. If you're listening to this podcast, nothing's going to be different for you. But if you are, no, I'm just saying it's going to be as great as usual.
This is how it normally goes.
If you're watching the show, you may notice a disturbing lack of B-roll this week, that we won't have the fancy B-roll because our equipment's still being moved up from...
Sadly, we lost Mike Aransky, and so we can't pipe in B-roll anymore.
He's still being
Mike, if you're
up.
There, come over the god, Mike. Nope, he's gone.
He's not there. I'm going to raise his daughter as if she were my own.
What are you going to change your name to?
It's what Aransky wanted. Penelope?
Yeah. Penelope Hatfield?
Just change your name to Scoop.
PH?
Yes.
Scoops.
You could have a show that would be PH.
Scoops McHatfield.
PhD. That would be
PH the... and D.
Oh, actually, that's
Penelope pretty... Hatfield and Damon.
That's pretty good, actually. And we would talk about, like, topics that are important to little girls.
Yeah. Games. Yeah. NES. She'd be like, tell me about my real dad. He's like, I'm your real dad! Into the kennel!
That's a dark turn.
It's how I was raised. It's all my children.
All I know.
I should say darker, anyway.
Let's start out by talking about EA Access. What is EA Access? Dan.
It is a subscription service where you can play like 4 EA games for $5 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Available on all platforms.
I see what you're doing.
Okay. It's a clever game.
This is an Xbox One exclusive service.
It is.
Exclusive.
So, yeah. Xbox One exclusive.
Exclusive.
Although it, like, depending on how you read what's come out,
like your
with,
reading level, like what grade you can you can read,
and what languages you speak. Mm. But depending on what how you read into the PlayStation statement that came out today from Sony,
responding, Zombie Mike Aransky's in here now,
responding to this being an Xbox One exclusive, like. They claim that Sony. They claim it's like, oh, we didn't want it.
We didn't even want this thing.
It's not a good value for customers. So we passed on it. So that's why it's an Xbox exclusive, because that's where you go for the things that aren't valuable.
So EA Access right now is $5 a month or $30 for a year, mm-hmm. with 4 games: FIFA 14, Madden 25.
Peggle 2,
and Battlefield 4.
With more coming.
Yeah, it's a hilariously random assortment of games. Here's my thing. So a lot
the
of
benefits don't end there. Yep. We should note, right? There are more benefits.
DLC
oh, yeah,
discounts?
Sure. Yeah, 10% off on DLC, and you're going to get early access to some EA
early
games.
Early access to games, significant games like Dragon Age Inquisition, and your save files will transfer over to the full release.
So from my perspective, and maybe one of you can explain it to me, there's a lot of hate for this online. A lot of the comments are really negative. From my perspective, I was thinking about buying FIFA 14. I got that World Cup fever. I'm like, yeah, I think I kind of, like, I buy a soccer game every few years. That game is $40, or EA Access is $30 for a year and includes FIFA 14. I'm just trying to figure out how this is, like, not a very reasonable deal.
Well, $5 a month, like, how long would you play that game realistically? Would you play it more than a couple months?
Actually, maybe that's actually totally a great
$10.
So maybe, like, if I could buy FIFA 14 for $40 and play it for a month and then say, soccer's stupid, and then for another 4 years, or I could just pay for what subscribe to this for a month and get access to the game.
And like, they also have a $30 for a whole year option, so you can get it even cheaper. Like, I actually do think it is a good value in a lot of cases, especially if they continue to add, mm-hmm. like, relatively recent games that are, and for Xbox One, there is nothing but relatively recent games. So
I think it is the assortment of games is just kind of weird and random, but mm-hmm. I think you're right. It's that Xbox One connection, you know, that's why, like, that's just all that they have to put on the service right now.
Yeah, EA will add their more recent games as they go along. It'll be interesting to see, like, if they have, like, a rotating selection or if they just build their catalog bigger and bigger. And it does seem like it's a shot at you know, GameStop's used game sales. Mm-hmm. Like, why would I buy a used copy of FIFA 14 when I can play this for $5?
That's a good point that I hadn't considered. Now, at least, yeah, if you wanted to play Battlefield 4 now, you could just pay $5. At least they're getting some money rather than nothing from GameStop, right?
Right.
I also think it's ahead of its time. Like, I think I've been saying for years that Steam should have a game subscription service.
Well, it has been tried. Mm-hmm. There was a site called GameTap that did it. Uh-huh. That failed kind of spectacularly. They didn't have a very good selection. They even tried doing exclusive content. They had American McGee make a fairy tale game.
Sam and Max, those adventure games started as GameTap exclusives.
It's the Telltale ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. All right. Cool. Yeah, that's right. I think you are right.
Thanks.
I will. You know, Dan was ready to drop the hammer, but now he's reconsidered.
But it's also been tried. I think Square Enix had a small site, or maybe I guess it was Eidos at the time. Mm. They had their own little subscription service that had, like, Hitman available.
Then you could, like, stream the games.
Yeah.
Online, right?
Yeah, because that's obviously a little bit different. Like, there was, you know, OnLive and some of the streaming services. And this is just straight up, like, you know, subscription to have access to the game locally on your system.
Yeah,
well, yeah, but OnLive would also give you access to, like, later they introduced that. And I do hope that Steam builds in the capability for other publishers to offer subscriptions to their games. Because, like, I don't see Valve doing it, like, trying to bundle up a bunch of other publishers' games into one thing. That's just not really the way Valve has historically operated. They give other people the tools to do things on their service.
Yeah.
It does seem like it sets us down a path where now if you want these sorts of access to libraries, you'll need to pay, like, 11 different people $5 a month, like, you know, Ubisoft and EA and you know, Square Enix and these different companies. And, like, that might be a little bit shaky 5 years from now, but, like,
it could be, but I mean, look at it this way. HBO Go, if that goes, like, independent of Comcast or you know, your cable provider, like, you'd pay $5 a month or $10 a month to access that.
Plus, I think people are getting used to, you know, people subscribe to Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime and Spotify. Yep. I think they're used to, like, just paying for small fees to all these different services.
Yeah. They do, if I had to guess, and I actually don't know why people are sort of down on this. I think it's just because it's EA and people are kind of...
I mean, my problem is that it's old games. It's a weird thing to launch with. Why didn't you wait a month and launch with Madden? Be like, hey, here's this thing, you know, this new program we want you to be excited about.
You can't give that away for $5 a month.
You can if you want somebody to be excited. If you want them to be... I mean, like, that's the thing is, I'm sure EA doesn't care that people aren't excited now. Get it down, get it going, get the groundwork laid, and then when Madden does go on it in 2-3 months...
I imagine this is always going to be intended for older games.
Yeah.
They're not going to give you access to Dragon Age Inquisition for $5. Right. You know? They want to get the $60.
But I mean, what they are doing is, like, if you put down this $5 here, you'll get a discount on DLC for their new games. Mm-hmm. So, and this will be a, you know, side benefit for that. Like, if you're already planning to buy all that stuff anyway, this could work out for you.
I think what's really smart is that even if you're not interested in playing these older games, I think a lot of people will pay $5 to play Dragon Age Inquisition a week early.
Yeah.
So the game becomes a $65 game, actually.
Mm.
But do you get a discount on buying Dragon Age Inquisition after you paid the $5 for this?
I don't believe
10%?
So.
Or is it just DLC?
Well, you get the deals. You get a discount on the DLC, but, like, if you subscribe to the service for $5 and then play Dragon Age a week early, you don't get $5 off the price of Dragon Age, as far as I know.
Because that would be a good deal.
Yeah, I totally think this is a good service. I think just the four games, it's sort of like, meh. It's like you need to have, like, 24 games. Like, give someone, like, get some, like, EA has access to so much stuff, all the old Burnout games, all the old, like, put some older titles on this service.
But because it's Xbox One only, they can't.
Like, I understand that that's a challenge, but, like, figure something out. Like, figure out a way to get some of those old Sega Genesis games on there, like some of the old Ultima games on there.
And that's actually a big theory about why Sony doesn't want it on their platform, is because they're going to roll out their PlayStation Now service, where they're going to be selling you access to old games that way.
Sure, yeah, that actually is. That's actually a totally good theory that I hadn't considered, is that PlayStation Now is almost here, and this is in maybe too much direct competition.
PlayStation
with
that.
That's when? Like, so that was like cheesy enough that it actually worked.
That's straight up Spaceballs jokes.
It seems like a good deal to me. The other games that you're going to get early access to this year are Madden 15, NHL 15, FIFA 15, NBA Live 15, as well as Dragon.
Like if you're a sports gamer, it's great.
Yeah. And then it is a little interesting to me that since EA has their own Origin service, that that's not part of this deal. It's just the Xbox.
Yeah, I expect they'll roll it out for Origin as well. Yeah. I mean, they've actually been making some good strides with Origin lately. Like they've been giving away free games, they've been doing free trials, and you know it's not as good as Steam, but it's not as bad as Uplay. So
that's the barometer.
Origin is not the bottom rung anymore.
Nice. I would absolutely love to see old SimCities and just some of the games from the EA Vault, you know, hit services, hit this service.
For sure.
Well, on Xbox One?
I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, it needs to not be exclusive to that platform, but as like a first, there's room for this to grow into a super cool thing.
I will be shocked if EA doesn't put it on every platform they possibly can.
Exactly.
Fire everything. Aransky, we're taking a strange corner here. Zombie Aransky, before we jump into the Hearthstone talk, we're going to talk about Destiny. So if you just want to go to the... Yeah, he did. He already did it.
He knows what's up.
I figured it out. The Destiny beta ended over the weekend. Mm. You guys get a chance to play?
A little.
What do you think?
Loved it. Great time. Played an hour, put down the controller. I'm like, I'm sold. Yeah. Just bring me the full game. I don't want to have anything else spoiled.
Yeah, I sat it out for pretty much that reason. Yeah. It's like, like a beta to me, if I don't have to play it for my job,
sure.
Like it's like, hey, would you like your first experience with this game to be kind of buggy and crappy? Play a beta.
Yeah, and then do you want to play that exact same thing when the game comes out and you're really excited for it?
Hey, you get to lose all your progress.
Yeah.
Sounds great. No, I'm just gonna wait for the real deal.
Yeah, I just wanted to try because I'd done the alpha or whatever right after E3, and that was fun. But I had been kind of dropped in randomly. I wasn't sure what was happening. So to play this, have the story from the get go, be able to understand, I was like, this is awesome.
And for your job, it is beneficial for you to get in there and understand it from day one.
I guess.
Yep. Just make stuff up.
Will you guys be in my strike team?
No.
No.
Today, Activision announced 4.6 million people played the beta.
Dang!
Which is apparently the largest ever for a new IP. Largest ever beta for a new IP.
Okay.
Mm. All you have to do is just make it look just like Halo and Mass Effect and, you know,
toss some Borderlands in there.
Yeah.
Now, one of my analyst sources, Ray Young, believes... Destiny could prove to be as big as, if not bigger than, Call of Duty this year.
I believe it.
You do?
Yeah, he says, overall, we estimate... No, that's a different quote.
That's a different one.
The key title in the third quarter will be Activision Bungie's new title, Destiny. One of the most anticipated titles this year. Checks are showing that Destiny has the potential to be as big as, if not bigger than, Call of Duty this year. We have modeled shipping of 8 million units of Destiny in the third quarter, which may prove conservative. For perspective, recently, Ubisoft revealed it had shipped in 8 million units of its new IP, Watch Dogs. And we believe the potential for Destiny is greater than that for Watch Dogs.
Yeah, I totally believe it.
I believe it's bigger than Watch Dogs, but I don't
Call of Duty
see
is
it
like, you're talking about
Call of Duty.
Like 20 million in sales, right?
Yeah. Well, for the recent ones, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean...
It's falling.
I absolutely believe that Destiny could be the best-selling game of the year.
I have a really hard time believing that. I can't swallow that pill.
It's
exciting. It's exciting with us gamers because we're following it and we know it's up. But Call of Duty has its audience that's just Call of Duty. And then on top of that, you add the hardcore IGN fan who, you know, consumes everything about it.
So, like, the beta, they eventually opened it up to everybody, but you would presume that it was not open for a super long length of time. It was a 10 gigabyte download.
Yeah.
It was kind of, you need to be kind of plugged into video games to have checked out this beta, and 4.6 million people did.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think...
Like, when that game's on store shelves and Walmarts and Targets and other places, GameStops.
I just think that
stores.
People right now are so hungry for something to play on their Xbox Ones and PlayStation 4s, and this was a free thing that is, you know, supposed to be like the next big thing that's really going to push your system. Like, I think that's probably, and it's also like, hey, what's Bungie going to do after Halo? There's a lot of curiosity there. I don't know if that's going to translate into people actually running out and buying it right away, especially if...
Oh, man.
Especially, like, there have been some you know, wishy-washy things we've heard about the amount of content that's actually in there, how much there is to do once you hit the level cap, how quickly you'll hit the level cap. It's unproven. It'll be interesting to see.
Every Halo game has always been consistently a bestseller. It's one of the biggest franchises in video games.
But not as big as Call of Duty.
And, well, yeah, but they weren't, like, partnered up with Activision's ability to manufacture hits. And the game's great. Yeah, and it's on last gen and current gen.
Yeah, we'll see.
It's crazy that Activision has both Destiny and Call of Duty. Like, if it has the two biggest games of the year, it's nuts. People hate on Activision, but they've got those. They've got, you know, Hearthstone is...
Skylander, World of Warcraft is still the unchallenged champion.
Yeah, very, very good at making money.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Here's a question. Will Destiny outsell Master Chief Collection?
Definitely.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
I will play Master Chief Collection more.
I just wonder, like, does that bother Microsoft? Like, Bungie's new IP will outsell their latest Halo collection?
It's a collection. It's a anthology. It's not a new thing that people haven't played yet.
Right.
Like, it's not an apples to apples thing.
Master Chief Collection is so good.
Also, it's only on one platform.
I literally wake up and I'm like, I can't believe that Master Chief Collection is a thing. That what? Thought, like, goes through my head. Like, I'm so, like, I was such
a... Oh, the baby!
The moon order! it's like a dream game. It's like I played so much Halo 2 and Halo 3 and Halo Reach. Now they're all together, all those maps, all those modes. Like, I absolutely anticipate that Master Chief Collection is going to be, like, my game for years. Like, that's going to be my go-to game for years and years and years. I genuinely believe that. And, like, it feels like they're doing it right. Like, all these, well, wait a second, are you doing, like, they've covered off on, like, all the weird questions, like, all the weird things that could have made it not be awesome. Mm-hmm. But in no, like, world does that game outsell Destiny.
I think it could potentially outsell Destiny on the Xbox One.
Maybe.
Like,
sure.
that's the only place that it's really going to be a contest.
Potentially.
By the way, I am still bummed that there's no Destiny on PC. That's dumb.
PC gaming, finally dead.
Yep. This analyst report comes on the tails of Activision's second quarter earnings reports. Does it surprise you to learn, or to know, that 60% of Activision's revenue last quarter comes from digital revenue?
No, not at all. Especially considering they own World of Warcraft
and Hearthstone.
Hearthstone probably isn't making them nearly as much money. It's making them money, but it's probably not like that much money.
It's impossible to speculate, but I would say it's probably a decent chunk.
I bet it is.
So in the second quarter,
digital revenue, like, that's factoring DLC. It's factoring
for Call of Duty Ghosts.
It's factoring all PC, virtually all PC sales of Call of Duty.
Digital console sales, like,
right. Yeah.
So 60, does it surprise me? I guess I agree with Dan. Like, since it includes WoW and stuff like that, yeah, maybe not. But that's still,
we should clarify: is this Activision or Activision Blizzard?
Activision Blizzard.
Okay, so Activision Blizzard is the parent company that owns both Activision and Blizzard.
Yep.
So it definitely. That, like, WoW still makes so much money.
Yeah.
So much money.
It's true.
Thanks, China.
Speaking of Hearthstone.
I was hoping to be a China story.
Speaking of China.
Yeah. I have some fine China.
The expansion has been out for a week now. First wing of the expansion. Did the second wing ever go live? Is that out now?
Yeah, I actually tweeted out a picture this morning. For the second week in a row, Blizzard had some problems rolling it out. It says, purchase successful, and then below that and behind that, it says, your purchase failed.
Just kidding.
Yeah, and so there's still, like, I'm terrified that I'm going to look at my credit card and I will have been charged, like, four times because I kept trying to hit the button.
Yeah.
And I actually still don't have access to the content, but... For most people, it is out and live, but it was once again kind of a shaky rollout, just because of the volume of people trying to get in, presumably.
Well, what do you think about what you've played so far?
Yeah, I mean, besides the bugginess of the rollout, the actual content itself is great. Super, super polished. The new cards are actually, like, really viable, and they're being used in a lot of decks and, like, changing the way that the game is played. The bosses on Heroic are, like, crazy tough. Like, so they struck that right difficulty balance where, like... Casual players or players that aren't, like, super hardcore into Hearthstone can get through them on normal and unlock the new cards. Then the heroic challenges are there, and we'll really, like, even if you're a great player, you'll really need to think about how you clear that content. And I gave Blizzard a hard time, and I sort of continue to for how long it took them to get this out the door, but it's like, the finished product is always so good that it's like, well, how much can you really complain?
Do you think it's the right amount of content for the price?
Which is what again?
$20 for five.
$20 for all of it.
Yeah.
Or like $5 for like the each wing, which is three bosses. I don't know. It feels a little bit like you're going to get through those bosses once, and right now they're not giving you a lot of reason to go back to them. And so it sort of feels like people are forced to pay that $20 just to get access to a few new cards. That's what it's really about.
How long did it take you to play through that wing?
Well, on normal, I got through all the bosses on my first or second try, but I'm pretty good at the game. It might take other people longer. Heroic, I'm still working on some of them, but they don't. That's kind of just for fun.
Like, how long did that normal playthrough take you?
An hour.
Yeah, that's a little steep for an hour's worth of content if you're not like interested in buying those new cards anyway. Yeah.
But then it ends up being like 5 hours spread over 5 weeks.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, they are doing some stuff like there's challenges to play through some of these bosses with specific like classes and stuff like that. So you know, Blizzard did some things to up the replay value, and Heroic does help a lot. It does feel like it feels a little bit like you have to have the cards if you're into this game at all, and so you kind of have to buy the content whether you care about it or not. Like,
sure.
Well, they did give you the rest of the game for free, so
yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's great. Damon said, you'd never spent a cent on Hearthstone, so you were happy to give them $20.
So yeah, I'm happy with the content. I like the new bosses. I think they're really cool. I like the new cards. I was already was on an arena run last night, and I already see people using the new cards and play. So.
And you guys are both playing on iPad rather than PC or Mac?
When I can, I play on my PC just because it runs better than my iPad too. That's all.
Yeah, the game. That's actually a great point. I think we've said it out loud, but it bears repeating that. The game says it supports iPad 2, but that's not a great way to play Hearthstone.
It supports.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It will work, but it's...
It's a really long load in the front, that's what I play on.
Slow and everything. I wish they would sort out the release. Like, I was looking forward to going home last night and playing it, but it wasn't out like it was supposed
to. They delayed the release till midnight. No one's exactly sure why, but I think it's because then there would be less people like hammering that server all at that moment. Like, as people wake up, they would maybe, download the
trickle
stuff.
In, download.
But even me, like, I woke up, I got up early because of the baby, and I tried to get it, like, 5 a.m., and it was still all jacked up, so.
Yeah. One of our listeners, Craig Campbell, from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Tulsa, Oklahoma!
Writes in, heard you guys mention having a lot of fun with Hearthstone. I went ahead and downloaded to try it. The card art looks great, and the introduction missions really hooked me. The game looks to be a lot of fun. However, after the tutorial missions, I have lost every match against the computer and other players. I know that there are guides out there on the internet that I can research, but I was hoping to sit down and enjoy this game casually. I want to enjoy Hearthstone, but the constant losing makes it hard to have fun. My question is this, how did you guys cope with the losses early on?
Yeah, I mean,
I've never lost.
Well, I mean, like, I got into the game so early. Like, I was one of the first people to get into the beta. And so, yeah, I mean, I lost some then, but, like, people didn't really know that much about the game yet. Like, people hadn't optimized what decks were good or what was good. Like, if you're coming into it now, it will be a little bit late. I would say maybe stop playing the CPU and try playing other players, because it does have a matchmaking system behind the scenes. And it'll try to, like, if you lose a bunch of matches, it'll eventually match you against a bunch of other losers. And then you can start winning. So that would be my suggestion. And then
be the king of the losers.
You unlock, as you use each class, you unlock more cards for that class. And so, play against other people, and you'll win some, you lose some. And then when you hit rank 10, you'll have all the mage cards, and then you'll have, some more deck building options at your disposal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wasn't frustrated when I first started playing. I do have a lot of experience playing Magic.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say I'm a great Hearthstone player by any means. I think I'm a decent Hearthstone player, but maybe it's just having years of experience with other card games sort of helps prepare me for it. I don't know. I just think the game is super fun even when I'm losing. Like, I love building decks, trying out new decks and card combos, and it's very satisfying to me.
I've had some spectacular losses that were kind of impressive and fun.
Nice. All right, we're moving on. Anything you want to say anything else about Hearthstone? Then lay it to rest.
Cardtastic.
We'll never mention Hearthstone again.
R.I.P.
I do not believe that.
It's every week now.
Probably can't go half hour without mentioning Hearthstone. Tomorrow, or today, depending on when you're listening and watching this, is the 25th anniversary of the Game Boy's release here in North America.
Well, we're old.
The little system that could.
Yep. There it is.
There she is.
I'm bummed. I forgot to bring mine in. I still have my original 1989 game.
Is it all like, it's got that like yellow look to it?
Yeah, yep. And it's got kind of the lines down the screen.
Yep,
the dead lines, yeah. But it still works. It still plays Tetris.
That's all you need.
Yeah, it's my little Tetris machine.
Yeah.
What are your first memories of the Game Boy?
Oh my lord!
I think I got the Game Boy for Christmas from my grandparents. So it was released in July, but I don't think I got it until.
I got mine at Christmas too, and I remember my mom was like, "There's no way I'm spending $100 on a video game."
Isn't that crazy? It was only $100.
Yeah. Wow. And adjusted for inflation. That's
Uncle Scott bought it for me. And I turned it on that night and had Tetris and golf. And that watching me play and then passing it back and forth with my uncle, that sold him. And next time we came to visit, he had one too.
That's actually a really good point. I think Game Boy brought in a lot of adult players.
Right.
Like businessmen that were on, like, traveling.
Exactly. My uncle took the train every day to be a lawyer in Chicago. And so he'd have it and he'd play there and he'd play a round of golf or he'd play Tetris or whatever.
Yeah.
I just remember, like, my aunt's boyfriend had one, and I kept nagging him to let me play it.
Yeah.
So eventually they just bought me one. It was for Christmas. My grandparents got it for me for Christmas.
That's awesome.
And I also remember that in, like, the fifth grade, I had to get braces, and I was like, pissed off about that.
Oh, yeah.
So to pacify me, my parents bought me a copy of Super Faceball.
Okay.
It was kind of like a super rudimentary first-person shooter before that was a thing.
Gotcha.
Weird.
Yeah.
I was always a Game Gear kid.
I know. I thought you were going to be a Game Gear kid as well.
This is the first Nintendo system I ever owned. I went back and forth with that in the Game Gear, and it was my first Mario game that I owned.
Like Super Mario Land.
Yeah, I remember like seeing the commercial for that and being like, "That's so cool!" And then we went out to pizza that night, and I went to get my jacket like when we were leaving. And my mom and dad had gone in front of me, and dad was like convincing my mom like, "No, he really wants it. We should go get it for him." Like so, they like surprised me, and after pizza, took me to the store to buy Super Mario.
I want to clarify the Game Gear. I'm not saying that was a smart choice.
Oh God,
my part.
No.
But I was a Sega Genesis kid, and then I was a loyal Game Gear kid. And in hindsight. That was a gigantic mistake.
You play the hand you're dealt.
All of our allegiance to Sega was a bad call. I regret it every day of my life.
Game Gear Genesis was a great system.
Genesis is a fantastic system. Game Gear is a disaster, in my opinion.
Master System wasn't
that's
fun.
The thing, like,
this set me on the path to a Saturn. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of problems I have. A lot of rage I got about Sega inside me.
Did you get that 32X?
No, that was it. The line, it was drawn.
I had a Sega CD and played a lot of Sewer Shark.
Yeah.
So much.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So, I never owned a Sega.
I did, so my Game Boy memory, I don't have a great Game Boy memory, but I've caught up on those games like piecemeal over the years. Like I finally played Link's Awakening, and it's fantastic.
So good.
I even think Metroid 2 is underrated. Yeah. A lot of those good Game Boy games I've caught up on.
Right around the same time, there are a bunch of other handheld gaming systems that came out, the Game Gear, the TurboGrafx, Express.
Was there a Lynx?
Atari Lynx.
Yeah. The Turbo Express played all of the TurboGrafx games just on the go.
Yeah, it wasn't
ahead of its time.
It wasn't even a different system. But none of those other systems caught on. Only the Game Boy caught on.
Right.
It's crazy.
It had Mario.
So it had
a character we all recognized.
And it had Tetris.
Yeah.
Came with the system. Yeah. It had the killer app. And it was the cheapest of all of them, and it had a better battery life.
That's my theory, is that the handheld console that has a better battery life is always one.
Did you guys ever have like the peripherals for this one?
Of course.
Like I had the
magnifying glass.
I had the magnifying, the handy
boy.
Oh.
I didn't have the speaker.
Somewhat playable.
I had the speaker.
I had the oversized Game Boy case that you opened that looked like a giant Game Boy and you opened up.
I did have the speaker that went on the bottom, but I didn't have the what are the wings there that flap open?
That's for your stereo sound.
Yeah,
holy
the speakers.
Crap.
Yeah.
It's like a home theater system up in here.
I did have the magnifier like.
The copy reads, it's the stereo amplifying, screen magnifying, night lighting, fire button enlarging, thumbstick controlling, compacting, easy carrying accessory for your Game Boy. Whew! Try saying that three times fast. It's a mouthful.
Don't do it.
But that's what you get when you have it all. Other Game Boy accessories leave you with nothing to say. Here, there's only one worth talking about. From the company STD.
Oh, wow.
One of my definitive Game Boy memories before I got the giant carrying case is that I was bringing it to school, and I had it in a brown paper bag, and I had my lunch in a brown paper bag, and I was trying to get into my locker, and I was like, I should drop my lunch, and I dropped the Game Boy.
And then you accidentally ate your Game
Boy. It smacked, and it wouldn't turn back on, and I burst into tears, and I was trying to figure out, and so like in like a last-ditch effort of like that will go for the rest of my life and how technology works, I was like, well, maybe if I drop it again, it'll start working. And so I did it, and sure enough, it turned on the next one. Right. And so for the rest of that Game Boy's life, if it didn't turn on, I would drop it on something, and then it would come back to life.
These things were actually really well built. There's all sorts of stories of, like, I dropped it off my deck, I dropped it in the pool, and it still worked after dried it off. There's that story about someone in the original Gulf War. Yep. Like it was
I've
like
seen that Game Boy.
This Game Boy was in an explosion, and it's all like burnt and melted. But you can still turn it on and play.
If you visit Nintendo's headquarters in Washington, they have that Game Boy there.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it was actually it's the first and last handheld gaming system I ever bought.
Like, oh, I'll never do this again.
Yeah, well, I've got everything I need right here. Why do I need something else?
How good was Donkey Kong 94 on the Game Boy?
Oh, yeah, I wanted to ask you about some of your favorite Game Boy games, but yeah, that one is so good.
And it spawned a whole, like, Mario vs. Donkey
Kong. That's like Mario vs. Donkey Kong
like a whole
now.
Franchise now.
Yeah. Man, I couldn't believe they improved on Donkey Kong, whatever, like 15 years after its release.
I mean, it's a totally different, like, they turned it into this clever puzzle platforming, like, thing that had never existed before, and it's weird, like, it eventually did get ported, and you can actually buy it from the 3DS eShop now, but for a long time, like, it's not called Donkey Kong 94, it's just called Donkey Kong, but it's not Donkey Kong, it's this weird...
and it's one of the clever things is it starts out like Donkey Kong, you play through the original three levels or so, and then it opens up to this whole other, like, puzzle platformer.
But it's, like, it's so good, it's, like, one of the best, like, I would put it in one of the best games ever. Like, certainly if we were doing the top 100 games ever, that would be on the list, and, like, for a long time, like, you had to, like, buy a cart on eBay, like, that was it.
Yeah, I think it's on the virtual console now.
Yeah, like I said, now you can, 3DS, there's all kinds of access to it. But
3DS-owning listeners who don't have, who never played it, you should definitely check out Donkey Kong 94.
I bought it on my 3DS, and I couldn't, like, if you have to run a search for Donkey Kong, and it brings up a million things before Game Boy Donkey Kong.
Alleyway was a launch game that I think I had. It was just like a breakout clone with, like, Mario characters. That one was really fun. You guys play Motocross Maniacs? Mm-hmm. It's a 2D side-scroller. It's like Excitebike, like on steroids. Just like crazier courses and loops and all that stuff. That game was really fun. Met with silence.
I didn't play it.
My parents didn't believe in motorcycles.
another thing that's so crazy that it was the only successful handheld from the time is that it kind of looks like garbage when you came down to it. And games like Super Mario Land were like hard to play because of the screen blur.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
All those Mario Land games, for months, we've been cooking up a feature where we rank the Mario games. Damon's been a part of this process. Yeah. And so we had to go back through and play the Mario Land games again because no one could quite remember. Like, those games are really good. No, those games are garbage. So it's like, well, we can't, like, I know my memory of Mario 3, for example. Yeah, yeah. But Mario Land, like, I don't know that I can trust myself. And to go back and play them now.
Don't hold up.
The original Mario Land is weird. Like, it is a weird game, and Mario's crazy tiny, and the Goombas are, like, these little round, like, it's just, it's strange.
It seems like off-canon, right?
Yeah, and it does, and and that's the thing, you're in...
This isn't Mario canon?
You're not in the Mushroom Kingdom. You're in the real world. You're running by, like, the pyramids and stuff.
Mario flies a plane. Like, a plane in it.
They're just weird games. They're strange.
Well, so is Super Mario Brothers 2, so...
Yeah, but that at least is a reason behind it. Like, you know, because it started as something else.
The Game Boy brand lasted for so long, and then they canceled it. They ended it in 2006 or 2007 or something. And I think that's so crazy. Like, it's such a strong, long-running brand. They're just like, no, now it's the Nintendo DS.
Yeah,
bring it back.
Yeah.
That's why when they introduced the Nintendo 2DS last year, I thought they should have called it the Game Boy DS.
Yeah,
right?
I would like that.
Yeah. When the DS came out, I was referring it to as the Game Boy DS forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone, at the time, the Nintendo DS obviously went on to be a huge success, but that was not clear for a long time, not until, like, Rain Age and Nintendox came out, even after the console
launched.
With the
light, really.
And so that was the speculation, was they hedged their bets by not calling it Game Boy, and if the DS turned into a disaster, then they would have come out with the successor to the GBA, the Game Boy Advance, and then been able to bring back the Game Boy name.
Yeah, after the Advance, they had the Game Boy Micro.
Yeah.
It was a little weird.
Stupid.
The Game Boy Advance was awesome.
Yeah.
Especially the Game Boy Advance SP.
SP was the deal. The clamshell? Come on.
Man. I played some more Mario vs. Donkey Kong on that system, too.
So Game Boy Advance SP was an incredibly good console.
Yeah,
awesome. Famicom version.
Yeah, that's exactly the one I have.
Correct me if I'm wrong. That was the first one with rechargeable battery?
Yeah.
Game Boy Advance itself took batteries. Yeah, Game Boy Advance SP is the first one that came. I remember reading the instruction manual, and it's like, it only gets 500 charges, so wear it down. And I'm like, I will. My friend would try to plug it in. I'm like, nah, man, how much battery's left?
I'm like that with my laptop now.
Yeah.
There was also the Super Game Boy, which is pretty cool. It let you play Game Boy games on your TV.
Yeah.
And it added color, kind of. You could pick. And then certain games, like Donkey Kong, would add, like, a... like artwork around.
Yeah, was that its own system, or was that a cartridge you plugged into
cartridge you plugged into your Super Nintendo?
Yeah, I had one of those, I think.
And it looked great. It did away with like the motion blur on the screen. I think that's how I played Link's Awakening.
And then some games would have like special, like most of the games would just like add different hues. Like, do you want it to be the red hue or the yellow hue or the green hue? But some games had like Super Game Boy support and actually were like kind of proper.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they would have different colors.
I miss the Game Boy. I wish they would bring that back.
They will. It'll be back, Damon. It'll be a big deal when it comes back.
Frosty the Snowman.
Yeah. There was a weird transition with the Game Boy Color. That was a little bit strange.
How so?
Well, because they had the Game Boy Color that was sort of like what I'm talking about with the cues, but then there were some games that were only on the Game Boy Color that you couldn't play on the old Game Boy, but the two consoles lived side by side, and like that was a bit of a dark period.
But even before the Game Boy Color, there was Game Boy Pocket, right?
Oh, yeah.
That was just a smaller...
It was just a thinner one, right?
Yeah, but still only in black and white. But I was playing Game Boy Color in college. I worked at the front desk in my dorm, and I'd be sitting there playing Game Boy Color, and if I think back, I think I had like several Game Boy Colors in different colors like over the years. I don't know why. I guess they would break and I'd just buy another one.
I think it's time they bring back the Virtual Boy. Get on this Oculus bandwagon.
They started virtual reality.
Before we leave the Game Boy discussion, I want to share this ad for Godzilla on Game Boy.
Ooh.
It's incredible for a number of different reasons here.
I'll be back.
First of all, Godzilla is saying, I'll be back on Game Boy. First of all, where did he go? Where is he going? Like, he's telling us, I'm leaving now. Oh, yeah. Why is he saying, I'll be back? Why is he saying Arnold Schwarzenegger's tagline?
Yeah.
Why is Game Boy in quotes, I'll be back on Game Boy?
Suspicious quotes.
Look at how crazy his hand is. Yep. It's like a baseball glove.
That's just depth of field.
How long is his arm?
Oh, I don't know. That's like someone screwed up the ad.
Yeah. I'm like, oh no.
Where?
Yeah, it's like they took the picture and tried to put the Game Boy on. It's like, oh, his hand's too small. Yeah. Just take another picture of the hand and blow it way up and slap it on there.
But that looks terrible. Dude, who cares?
I've got to salvage this thing.
Godzilla's back, or he will be.
When? Godzilla doesn't even talk. Why is he talking?
Godzilla will never come back if we don't make this ad.
Great.
Their errors were made, but the Toho Company Limited continues its Godzilla train.
That's true. They just released the new Godzilla in Japan. It was the number one at the box office.
Yay.
The first non-Disney number one at the Japanese box office in like 19 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because they had Frozen, the Maleficent, and then Planes, Fire and Rescue were all number one movies until Godzilla came along.
Jeez.
Yeah. Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Do you think there's people in Japan that are watching, like, American cartoons, like adults, and they're like, no, it's not, like, the way that people here watch anime, and they're like, no, it's art, and it's this big deal, but they're just watching, like, SpongeBob?
I don't know.
Like, the opposite of an otaku?
Probably. I mean, they put a bunch of English words on their shirts they don't understand.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's actually true.
You made me think of it, because Disney's the tops over there.
Can I share with you the best English on a t-shirt that I saw, I forget which time I was there, one of my trips to TGS. I was in McDonald's, and this girl was, like, young. She was maybe, like, 12 or 13, and she was wearing the shirt that said, 666 Adrenaline Fuck.
I like the one that you, me, and Geddes saw, the one that was the picture of Beethoven.
Yeah.
And then it just said, motherfucking Beethoven. I was like, yeah, we're going to buy that shirt.
You going to get that shirt for your daughter?
Yeah.
That's also where the phrase, let's get panda, comes from.
Yep.
Anyway.
Hello, Shark. Nice to meet you, wasn't it?
Yeah, I put on
cat. I'm Shark. Nice to meet you.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was. I put on cat. Checking in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@IGN.com, just like Kyle did. Kyle says, what would you do? What if scenario. What would you do if you were reviewing a game and encountered a game-breaking bug that kept you from finishing the game? Recently, on my playthrough of Wolf Among Us, I had to replay one section of the game 5 times until it finally stopped freezing up on me. I liked the game, but this really damaged the experience for me, and I almost gave up. What kind of bugs have hampered your gameplay experiences? First, Dan, what's IGN's policy if we're reviewing a game and there's a game-breaking bug that prevents us from finishing it?
If it's broken, it's broken. We give it a really low score, mm-hmm. like in the 3 or 2 area. Like, mm-hmm. but that mm-hmm. honestly, that doesn't happen very often. Yeah. And generally, like oftentimes, if we get games before they come out, we will get in touch with the developer and say, hey, this is broken. How do we fix this? And you know, if we can test it out, they'll give us a patch, and then if we can test it out, then it's working before we have to post the review. then we can get around that. Because that's always really awful to have to do.
Yeah.
because I mean, with a situation like Wolf Among Us, it's like, hey, this is a really good game. We really hope they fix this, and we don't have to say it's broken. But yeah, honestly, I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often. But yeah, usually there's a fix. When you're playing games before they come out, sure, they're not finished.
Right.
Yeah. Not completely finished.
Yeah. I feel like what happens more often is the opposite. You know, since bugs are sometimes uncommon. Yep. We'll review a game and give it a glowing review, and then there's fairly widespread reports of their issues, and people think, why didn't IGN bring this up?
Right.
On the publisher's side, but it's like, well, we can't report on things that didn't happen to us.
Yep. Yeah, you hit a wall at a certain spot, or this happens, or like Fallout New Vegas.
Yeah.
You have to equip this hat and go here to do this, and then everything's over.
Well, Fallout New Vegas, I played all the way through. I had like one crash time, and it's like, this is great. And then everyone's like, what are you? And I played it before release, too.
Yeah.
There was a patch shy of everything. And like I had virtually no problems. I think another great example is Battlefield 4. Mitch had no problems with it. He never got kicked out of a match until like weeks after it came out.
Yeah. So let's say a game, 10% of people experience major bugs in a game. Like, that's a disaster. That's so many people. But like, that still means the odds of a reviewer having that happen to them before they have a chance to talk about the game with a bunch of people, you know, the odds are low that you would encounter any of those.
Roughly
issues.
1 in 10. But yeah, 10% failure rate would be huge.
Yeah. So it's a challenge, and that I feel like it happens in that direction more often.
And when you think about it, like if a game has a 1% failure rate, like 1 out of 100 people, if a game sells 1 million copies, it's a lot of people who have problems, and they're going to go on the forums and yell really loud and say this game is broken.
Yeah. Give it a 0 score on Metacritic.
Yeah.
No.
But their grief is legitimate. I mean, that sucks to buy a game that's
not legitimate. Is to then say that we are on the take.
Yeah. I do understand where they're coming from.
Sure.
Because that absolutely does suck. And at the same time, like sometimes we will run into that problem where it's like, this game is buggy as hell, it's broken, we can't play it, it gets a really low score. And then people will come on and say, you guys were paid by the other guys to get this low score because I played through it just fine. It's we can only say...
I never saw that problem, so then it doesn't exist.
Yeah, we can only say what happens to us,
and
it's not going to necessarily happen to everybody.
The bug that stands out to me is Dead Island.
I remember that.
Very early in the game, I got stuck in a house, like a cabin.
There was an invisible door.
Yeah, I like opened the door to leave and then was like... couldn't leave, and then the zombies were outside. They couldn't come in, and I never got out of that room, so I wasn't able to play Dead Island.
You're still in that room today.
I am. My character's still there. At least I thought
you're safe from zombies.
Yeah, I'm safe. I'm safe in that house.
You won. Especially.
You won the game.
If there's anywhere you want to be stuck, yeah, I won Dead Island. I've survived.
My one is a Dead Island 2. Or Dead Island, what was the second one that isn't the second one?
Epidemic.
Riptide.
Oh yeah, Epidemic.
Where I was playing it before a release and before a patch clarified collectibles. And so, like, I went out, like, I was trying to platinum it before it even came out, and I got to needing just a few collectibles, and I eventually was like, I don't know where these are. I had the developer email me where the locations were, and I'm like, they aren't there.
Yeah.
And I went out and bought the guide that was at GameStop. I had markers like a madman on these scribbles, and I'm like, they're just not, they don't exist.
Aww.
And so I was like, well, there's, like, 30 hours of my life I'm not getting back. But I enjoyed the ride up until that point, so I wasn't too upset.
What's going on with Dead Island is confusing. They announced Dead Island 2 at E3, and then after E3, they announced another Dead Island game.
It's a Dead Island
Escape
MOBA.
From Dead Island.
Dead Island Epidemic, and then there's the one that takes place in the island of California.
Yeah.
That's Dead Island 2. And it's a metaphorical island.
Okay.
That's confusing.
I think it's just two games, isn't it?
I don't know. Yeah, it is. No, there's
a
third
their whole one. Naming scheme has gotten very convoluted.
Right.
It's an archipelago.
Yeah.
At this point, a dead archipelago.
I'm not going to condone that pun. I got to 499 orbs in Crackdown.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't a bug. Like, I'm sure the 500th one is out there, but they didn't give you any mechanism. They're not on a map anywhere. You can't like buy like. There's no even a guide wouldn't have helped because I don't know the 499 I've collected.
Yeah.
Like, so I just. Years ago,
let it go.
And
it let
just,
it go.
I think one of the famous ones was the original Black and White, where they I believe they sent out the review copy, and then they patched it like the review copy worked, and then they patched it before they shipped it, and they broke the last level. So like everyone's like, oh, this game is really cool, and then it comes out and like, oh, this game is broken, you can't finish it. It's like, oh, that sucks.
Greg, I picked this next question mostly for you.
Oh, thanks.
It's from Evan.
Evan Gulling? I went to high school with him.
Yep. He says, so we all know WB Montreal could have done a better job on Arkham Origins. I know you liked it, but could it have been better? Was it as good?
Could every game be better? Yes.
Except for Super Metroid.
Except for Super Metroid.
I reviewed it. I liked it too. Yeah. I said it was a good game, but yeah, there's a lot of room for improvement. For one thing, those stupid shot gauntlets can go straight to hell. It's like, hey, let's take everything that's really cool about the combat system and then make it not matter anymore.
Right.
Great idea, guys.
He asks, but does this mean that WB Montreal is done with the franchise? Now that Rocksteady is supposedly done with standalone Batman games, will WB Montreal continue to make them, or could they begin working on spinoff games in the same universe? If so, what spinoff would you like to see? I'd like to see them do a Green Arrow game that could play like a mix of Arkham City and the Tomb Raider reboot, which actually sounds really cool.
That does sound totally rad.
That's a really good one.
Yeah.
No, I don't think WB Montreal's finished. I mean, with the Batman Arkham series, that's another can of worms. I think how Arkham Knight plays will tell you what's going to happen next. I still hold out hope that in Arkham Knight, Superman and Wonder Woman, or just Superman, will show up and be like, hey, do you need help with this? And Batman, of course, is going to be like, get the hell out of here. They'll be like, all right, just like they did to Robin, spoilers, in Arkham City. And then they'll take off and be gone, but that'll give us the hint that Rocksteady's moving on to either a Superman game, or if it is Superman in Wonder Woman, then a Justice League game that'll go that way. And if that's what if that actually happens and that's where it's going with Rocksteady, then I don't think they're going to let WB Montreal get in there and muck around in that universe as much.
See, I feel differently. I think absolutely they're going to give WB Montreal an opportunity to continue making Arkham games. I mean, this is based on nothing, right?
Yeah.
But just, like, first of all, I know Arkham Origins. I actually didn't like Arkham Origins. I didn't think it had the right feel. It just didn't feel the same.
They did tweak the combat in some kind of weird, subtle way that I the timing is slightly different.
Yeah, the timing was different.
And so, you know, even with that context, like, I wasn't wild about the game. I still think they proved that as, like, a first effort. Like, you think about when, like, companies like Sledgehammer started making Call of Duty. Like, those games are bad, but then, like, they just get better and better and better until, like, sometimes the B studio can, like, become the A studio.
So. Yeah, well, that was Treyarch.
That's what I meant to say.
Sledgehammer just started making them.
Yep. I meant to say Treyarch. They were the ones that continue getting better and better.
Yeah, like, Call of Duty 3 was Treyarch's first Call of Duty game, and that is kind of considered to be the worst Call of Duty.
We called it the worst one.
Yeah, so it's, like, this could very well just be their first shot at it, and it wasn't quite up to par. And next time, like, I'm sure they learned a lot of things by making Arkham Origins.
That's how I feel.
I guess the question would be, would they then make more Arkham games or just more Batman games? Like, I think
that you got to get out of the Arkham universe.
I think, like, they've already stretched that tie so tenuously thin. Mm-hmm. Like, calling this new villain the Arkham Knight makes no sense.
Yeah.
I mean, like, there's no way they can explain, like, say who that guy is and have it make any sense. Like, I just can't imagine a scenario where
He's Arkham City screwed up his life, and now he's out there trying to make sure nobody's life gets screwed up by
done.
It.
Done.
It's just weird.
It's like, comics. Like, that doesn't make any sense. He's dressing as a bat.
Like, Arkham Origins made no sense. Arkham City barely made any sense. It's like
that's why I'd be down for Arkham Asylum 2.
Yeah,
you could do that.
Sure.
That would be really cool.
But then you're scaling it back down again.
But I'm fine with that. Like, I've always liked the diehard scenario. You're confined to a small area.
I want them to get away from Arkham. Call it Batman Gotham something. Give them the freedom to not be tied to Arkham in any way, shape, or form.
Yes, man, even their Twitter account is like Batman Arkham. Like, it's not for better or worse. They're hanging their hat on that brand.
Yeah,
right?
I never liked that idea. It's like Batman is the brand, not Arkham. Anyway.
But Batman can go in so many directions.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, you can take Batman wherever you want him to go. But no, you've got to be tied to this prison.
Yeah.
Oh.
So we don't know what WB Montreal is working on now?
Correct. So we'll see.
Bonus question.
Yeah.
What's your interest level in Gotham, the new TV show?
Hi.
Really?
I'm looking forward to it, yeah. I'll see what they got, where they got up their sleeves. What do you got?
Fox.
What's DC working on there? TV's been good recently.
Yeah, but then this is an entirely different universe.
Yeah,
different creative team.
Spoilers. Like, every DC universe is a different universe up until this Flash thing that's not out yet that we can't talk about. But, so that does not throw me. That is not like, what?
I know.
This isn't in the Smallville universe?
I look at this as like a blank slate. It could be good, could be terrible.
Sure.
Or somewhere in between.
This is Matt Anderson.
What's up, Matt?
He says, Elder Scrolls Online has been out for over 3 months
and
on
it's
PC.
A raging success.
As a console player, I have not heard any news on its future release for the consoles, and I have not heard any news on whether or not PC players are enjoying it. Is this game dead? Should I still be interested in this game for my console? Elder Scrolls Online.
You played a bunch when it first came out, right?
Yeah. I actually can't speak to whether it's that or not because I had to stop playing it because I had a kid, and MMOs are never going to be a part of my life again. that particular part of my life is over forever. Yeah. But I liked what I played of it, but unfortunately I don't know. Like, I haven't been keeping an eye on like server populations or knowing whether there's actually anybody enjoying the in-game content.
I played about 15 minutes all told, so I'm not the guy to ask.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say the same thing that I always say, which is that that game got a really, really bad rap, and some of it's fair, but I genuinely believe that in like 12 months, you know, if and when it goes free-to-play or hits consoles or whatever, that you'll see threads pop up on Reddit and other message boards that are like, man, like, I'm glad I gave this game a shot. Like, it's a lot better than people made it out to be. Like,
Batman Arkham Origins.
Like, if you do give it a shot, like, that world is incredibly detailed. There's so much content. I think it's got the best sort of leveling and skill system in any MMO that I've played, and I've played a lot of them. It's slower paced, right? And that's the opposite direction that the genre kind of goes. Like, Final Fantasy XIV is sprinting everywhere, and the crazy events with, like, hundreds of people piling on a boss, and it sort of doubles down on, like, that Guild Wars formula. And Elder Scrolls is, like, plodding and slow, and that I can see how that turns people off, but for me, I would hop into that world and sort of be, like, totally enveloped in it for, like, a few hours and then pop back out. And it wasn't afraid to, like, do its own thing in that sense. The console news was just that it got delayed.
Yeah, it was delayed by 6 months.
Yeah.
So.
But then they've never talked.
But then they've never talked about it.
Yeah, they've gone real dark on it. I mean, I kind of expect them to pop up with like, oh, here's like all the changes we're making. Here's you know how we've responded to the criticism.
That studio absolutely has a lot of things they need to sort out with that game, and just I suspect, you know, based on nothing, my suspicion would be that the subscriber numbers have been lower than they expected, and they are probably wrestling with. Whether they should or when to go free-to-play, or maybe they need to delay that until after the console version comes out so they can get $60 from people, or, like, they have a lot of challenges ahead of them. But the core game, I thought, was great.
Yeah. Leaf reviewed it for IGN, right?
Leaf,
sorry. And we actually reached out to him, and we have an audio clip that we'll try to cut in here. But basically, he said that he doesn't think it's dead. He still signs on, and he still sees people running around. There's no question that it's not taken off the way Bethesda hoped it would, but he says dead is not exactly.
I still want to play it when it comes to PS4. I still think you'll see a bunch of people get on board when that happens to see what it's about and what's happening. Absolutely. I played it for a little bit on PC, but it was just like, all right, I'll wait. Yeah.
And when it does come out on console, it'll be a huge shot in the arm. Yeah. And it's basically a second launch for them. They'll have ironed out a lot of the big problems they had when they launched on PC. So.
And that game is Final Fantasy XIV. I actually didn't play any of the console stuff, but I've heard through other people that it went well, smooth. Yeah. But Elder Scrolls, you can just tell based on the way that the skill bar is set up and everything else that game is going to feel fantastic with a controller. Mm-hmm. I chose to play in first person, which some people think was crazy. But like, if you play that game in first person and you only have about 4 or 5 skills on your bar at any one time, then you can switch to a different set of 4 or 5. Like, that's totally going to work with triggers and face buttons on a controller.
Nice.
It's going to be great.
And you can play the PC version with a gamepad, can't you?
I don't actually think it did officially support gamepads. I'm not sure. I don't think it did.
All right, one more email this week. Now, GameScoop is not usually known as a gaming tips show.
No. We have the tip line for that.
Yep.
1-800 call scoop. The extra O and P are for you being overpowered.
But our listener Will does have some tips for us on Watch Dogs. He says, I was listening to the latest Game Scoop, heard about your frustration with the Watch Dogs criminal convoy missions where you have to knock the target down, right? We were talking about this. It's much easier to just kill them, just murder them.
Murdering people is always the way.
Will says, I've been playing on realistic and have found the following to work. Create a traffic jam where there are many hiding spots. Provoke all targets to leave their cars. Hide until they stop searching. They won't re-enter their cars, though, so then you can sneak up on them and take your target down.
So just cheese the game.
Yeah. He says, this is even easier at night when you've triggered a blackout. I gotta admit, I haven't you've been using that mechanic. I haven't been triggering blackouts.
The blackout is kind of crazy powerful.
Really?
Yeah.
I should try that.
Like, nobody can see you except for, like 3 feet away for a good 30 seconds.
That detail that they won't re-enter their cars is important. Because, I'll just hide. I'll just hide until the alert goes down, and then they forget about me, and then I'll try moving in.
Like one of those stealth mechanics that's in every stealth game that's completely unrealistic, but is kind of necessary for a stealth game. Otherwise, you have to restart the moment you're spotted, if you like, if you want to have any chance.
And that's what I've been saying for years, is that the stealth genre, I've been wanting, it's been on my list of features I want to write on IGN or videos I want to do about how stealth games are kind of broken in, like, a few fundamental ways.
It's not broken, actually. I mean, like, it's unrealistic. But yeah. But like, that is kind of a natural reset that you do instead of quick loading.
Sure. So, but then, like, for them to not re-enter their cars and stuff like that is, like, well, like, you, they, like, in Skyrim or whatever, like, a dude gets shot in the face with an arrow, goes flips end over end, and his buddy's like, whoa, must have been the wind. But it's like the flip side is he would hunt you relentlessly and chase you down and kill you. And then
4 hours from there he finds you, you killed my friend.
Exactly. So it's like, that's not funny. They're like, Dishonored, I had the same problem with that game. I have the same problem in every stealth game. Yeah. Where, like, they're either, if they're too realistic, that's not fun. But if they're not realistic enough, that's not fun.
Yeah. And they have to forget about you very quickly. Otherwise, you're sitting there for like what's a realistic amount of time for somebody to stop looking for you? An hour?
Yeah.
It's like, am I hiding in a closet for an hour waiting for this guy to stop hunting for me?
You know, and if they acted too much like humans, like, they need to follow patterns, but then that's kind of boring and dumb. And like,
like, stealth games are kind of puzzle games in that way because you are looking for the pattern that they're following.
So
and
Mark and the Ninja did really well.
Yeah.
Oh, Mark and the Ninja.
But I mean, this exploit, this thing that he's doing is he's exploiting how they are unable to resume their mission script after they've been interrupted.
That kind of sounds like a legit bug.
It's not necessarily a bug. It's an oversight.
Yeah.
Maybe they just
forgot to program. Oh, and then they have to get back in their car and proceed on their route.
I guess it is kind of a bug because it's behaving not the way you would expect it to. The way I usually did those missions is to create a traffic jam or, you know, block a street. And then throw down some remote bombs in a row.
Yeah.
And, you know, it usually took me a few tries to get this right because I have to figure out which car the guy's in and where they're going to stop and place the bombs in the right way so I'd blow up every car except the one with the guy.
You know, I can't kill the guy in those missions.
Yeah. I killed the guy in that mission quite a few times trying that.
Damn.
Eventually, I got it.
Did you see Watch Dogs might be going to New Jersey?
Yeah, I saw that Camden, New Jersey it tweeted out something about Camden.
Yeah, the official Watch Dogs account tweeted out a message saying, like, surveillance, 24-hour surveillance is required in Camden, New Jersey, something like that. And then, so maybe some, like, downloadable content.
It's very kind of on-the-nose hint, if that's like, the case.
Also, what a random city. Moving from Chicago to Camden, New Jersey.
Maybe it includes, like, the whole, like, tri-state area.
Maybe. I don't know.
I did see they just put out a new patch that I have to test out on a couple PCs that supposedly eliminates some of the stuttering you get with high texture, like the ultra texture settings. That was a bummer. Like, I was able to get mine running on high texture settings fine, which, like, it had been running crappy and then all of a sudden started working really well. I don't get it, but that's another one of those weird bug things that affect people in different ways. Gotta test out the new patch, see if it works better.
I think that's all the scoops we have for this week. Before we go, tell me a great game that starts with your first initial.
Gremlins.
For which platform?
Game Boy.
Gremlins on Game Boy was great. You're gonna put the Greg Miller.
You said G. I gotta think of a game that's great that starts with a G. Ghostbusters. There you go.
Yeah, geez. Don't pick mine.
Dragon Age Origins.
Joust.
Yeah, I'll use Disgaea. For me, it's easy. That is all the scoops we have for you this week. Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Justin. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.